different social causes and everything, and we put people in contact with each other.
We've got just 1 minute left, a little less than a minute to meet our match. So now's the time. If you've been waiting and listening and not wanting to pick up the phone because you've been so interested in this interview, take a moment right now, 877-500-5266, and match our very generous donors' $250 match. Become a member of KBOO. You can do that also by becoming a sustaining member, where you contribute a little bit of money every month. This is a safe, secure, and sustainable way to finance the station and keep us moving forward into the future. You can decide the amount. It could be $5 a month for a $60 a year membership. It could be $7.50 a month for a $90 membership. It's up to you. If you are already a sustaining member, you can increase your membership. You don't need to wait for the next drive. Nobody's going to say, oh, your membership has stopped being sustained, because it keeps going as long as you want it to. Now's the time. Show your support for KBOO, 877-500-5266, and thank you so much for your support.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Katie O'Brien's, located at 2809 Northeast Sandy, a neighborhood sports bar serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Lunch was provided by Dots Cafe, located at 2521 Southeast Clinton Street, serving food and drinks to the Southeast Clinton neighborhood since 1991, including vegan and gluten-free options as well as brunch. Dinner was provided by Dove Vivi, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason, serving cornmeal crust pizza for dine-in and takeout.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine. My guest is James Russell, and we are talking about his new book, Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis, published by Beacon Press. This is a story of a substantial transfer of wealth from everyday workers to Wall Street financiers. James W. Russell is the author of 8 books. He is an authority on retirement policy in the United States, Europe, and Latin America. He led one of the first employee movements to successfully challenge the dominant trend and replace a 401k-like plan with a more secure traditional pension plan. He has taught at universities in the United States and is a Fulbright professor in Mexico and the Czech Republic. And I understand, James, that you will be teaching in Portland in the summer.
Yes. I'm a former KBOO supporter from the 1980s when I taught at Lewis and Clark and was very active in the Portland Central American Solidarity Committee. And I will be coming back from 29 years exile on the East Coast and be doing some teaching at Portland State.
Great. Great. Well, thanks for your support. Can we start by having you explain a short, compressed history of how U.S. workers went from having traditional pensions to having to build up individual stock market investment accounts to finance retirement income?
Well, 1981 is the key year, because that's when the the Department of Treasury actually gave the green light to start replacing traditional secure pension plans with 401k-type plans. And when those came in, there were a lot of promises and very optimistic projections that people would do a lot better by investing in the stock market on their own. But then after 25, 30 years, as the first generations began to retire under these plans, they realized that not only were they not doing better, but they were doing a lot worse. I would say in most cases, people get about less than half of what they would have otherwise gotten for a similar investment of employee contributions. So that's what really the crisis is the shifting from a plan that pretty much worked for those people who had it to a type of plan that really doesn't work in terms of retirement security.
And how exactly did people become convinced that this 401k-like kind of system was the way to go?
Well, there were just very, there were models that were presented to the public, but any model which is an attempt to predict the future is only as good as its assumptions. And these had very optimistic assumptions about how the stock market would behave, about how much money people would be able to save, which were really not met either by what happened with the stock market or with people's ability to save for them. I mean, I estimate that somebody would have to put away close to 30% of their income every year for 35 years or so to be able to match what they would get in a pension, you know, in a traditional pension. And, you know, who can do that? Who has normal expenses of, you know, paying for houses and all the other things?
And why is it that the pension plan works so much better at accumulating replacement income for the retiree?
Well, a pension plan is really an insurance plan where you are insuring yourself that you will not outlive your money. And so what happens is essentially the short-lived subsidize the long-lived. That is to say, everybody, it's like Social Security, I think, is what listeners can sort of most relate to, the way that Social Security works, which is like a pension plan, in that people contribute to it throughout their working lives, and then when they retire, there's money for them that's guaranteed for the rest of their life. Now, some people will live only a few years after retirement, and others will live to ripe old ages into their 90s and maybe even over 100. And all of them are guaranteed. The people who die early, their money stays in the system and is able to support people who live for a long time, which is why, in actuarial terms, Social Security and traditional pensions can pay out much more than anybody who's trying to do it on their own. I mean, I can give you an analogy, which I think is very compelling. If you're going to insure your house against a fire, it makes much more sense to buy insurance than to try to save up money to get to the equivalent amount in case your house was going to burn down. The social insurance approach that Social Security and pensions have is just able to be much more generous and efficient in terms of delivering retirement security.
You say that many people believe that they have much more money in their 401ks. They see the size of it increasing. What do they have to worry about?
Well, first you have to make a distinction between how much money you have in an account and how long it will take you in retirement. And in my experience of counseling hundreds of people on this subject, is that while most people understand you need to build up a fairly sizable pot of money, they don't quite understand what you're supposed to do with that money when you actually do retire. And there are several different strategies of what you do with it. The strategy that I would say has the most amount of press is what's called the 4% strategy, where you take out 4% of what you've accumulated and then you live on that. Now, if we look at the figures from the Federal Reserve in their survey of consumer finance, they show that the average account balance for people approaching retirement that is over 55 years of age is about $100,000. Now, you can do the math, and $100,000 would afford you a $4,000 a year retirement income, which is hardly enough to support anyone, even if you add on top of that people's Social Security income.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about Social Security for a minute, because you do also write about that in this book, Social Insecurity, 401ks and the Retirement Crisis. You write about the attack on Social Security. So Tell us a little bit about how you see Social Security faring in the future, given what's what the threats have been in the recent past.
Well, there is what's called the three-legged stool, which was this idea that was floated around till the 1980s or so, which was that for people to have retirement security, they needed to have Social Security as the first leg, a traditional pension as the second leg, and then their own retirement. And then we know that the second leg was sawed off or taken away, whatever analogy you want, because the pensions were replaced for large numbers of people with these shaky 401k accounts. And that leaves the only really secure part of the American retirement system is Social Security. And Social Security has worked remarkably well. Okay, it's the most successful program, domestic program, that the federal government has. It's clearly the most popular one. Something like one out of every four households in the United States has someone collecting Social Security. So it is a plan that works. Now, why would you want to end a plan that works? It's no great mystery. It's because Social Security ties up an enormous amount of retirement income, or not income, but retirement savings that could otherwise go through Wall Street. And the big financial interests in this country would love to get their hands on that, either to have the whole thing privatized, and then they would manage it and collect all their profits and commissions and administrative fees and so forth, okay, or they would divert some part of it, which was what Bush tried to do in 2005. So it's all very logical why you have these interests that are out there that are trying to undermine Social Security. Now, they, on the other hand, know that Social Security is enormously popular. And so what they've been trying to do is to undermine people's confidence in it by putting out so-called studies that indicate that it's in financial trouble. Sometimes they put out studies that indicate that people could do better by investing money on their own. And neither one of which is true. But if you say it enough, you have enough people who are going to at least begin to doubt Social Security.
So when you say that the role of the financial services industry in promoting these plans is to profit from them, you're talking about Wall Street and other people who work in the whole industry around financial services?
Right, right. The whole financial services industry has expanded enormously since the 1980s. And the getting a hold of more and more of retirement savings has been part of what has fueled that expansion. I mean, there are trillions of dollars that are in retirement savings in this country.
And just to get back to Social Security for 1 minute, there was the recent Bowles-Simpson proposal to reduce the COLA and change the formula for determining benefits. What's the status of that, and how much of a threat do you think that is?
Well, it was beaten back. I mean, the problem with it, there were multiple problems with it. One problem was that it would start moving Social Security from being a program that benefits everybody from lower classes up through the upper middle classes in this country to a plan that would be means-tested for just poor people. And so to transform it into essentially a welfare program, which would have then undermined the cross-class basis of support that Social Security now enjoys, which is why every time that there's been an attempt to put through some sort of regressive change of Social Security, it's been beaten back because it is so popular. But if you could change it into a welfare program, we know how the poor get treated in this country. They don't have a really effective lobby in Washington to protect them. So Bowles-Simpson, was bad in that kind of way, but it did not succeed. However, it is not entirely put to rest because I think that there are kind of an A, B, and C plan of the enemies of Social Security. A is to privatize. If you can't privatize, you lower the benefits of it, which was what Obama attempted to do with lowering the cost of living adjustment. And then I think there's a plan C, which is that if you don't do the necessary actuarial adjustments of it over the years, by something like 2033, it'll have to start reducing benefits. But that's a very easy problem to fix. But if Congress has enough people who are out to undermine Social Security, they might not fix it, and then we would have a problem in 2033.
And the whole issue of means testing, it does get some support from people who would say, well, why should the super rich get Social Security?
Well, to me, the issue of the super rich, I don't begrudge them getting Social Security. What I do begrudge them is that they don't pay their fair share of support for it, because Social Security is set up so it only taxes the first $118,500 of income, which of course is more than what most people have. But when you get into the rich in this country who have millions of dollars of income, most of their income is shielded from Social Security taxation. If you were to lift the cap on income tax, Social Security would have a lot of revenue that would come into it that would make it more than solvent for the next 75 years and would actually set the basis for expanding benefits, for which there's a very good argument given the failure of 401ks to actually produce retirement security for most people.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, your last chapter of your book, Social Insecurity, talks about what we can do. And one of the things that you talk about is expanding Social Security.
Right. And it's a part of a pretty big campaign now in the country. It's something that is moving in the Democratic Party. There's, for anyone who's really interested in Social Security, I highly recommend the new book called Social Security Works by Eric Kingson and Nancy Altman, who are behind a lot of the movement to try to expand Social Security benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did interview Eric Kingson, so that's something that's on our radar too. I'm speaking with James Russell. We're talking about his book, Social Insecurity, 401ks and the Retirement Crisis. A very, very clear description of how we got to this point and what some of the problems are. It's available with your pledge to KABU right now. So please make that call of support to KABU if you haven't already. You can get a copy of Social Insecurity. And you make the case for the role of fees. It's one of the things that I think is a factor in why 401ks, you say, don't work like they are supposed to work. What is the role of fees, and how are they hidden?
Well, I think people who are listening to this program who are in 401k or programs like that, if you look at the statements that you receive, I would challenge you as to whether you can understand them. The enormous amount of information that gets sent to people, but if you were to ask the simple question, what are the actual fees that are being taken out of this for the administration of the program, or what happens when new stock is bought, who takes a commission on that, you would be extremely challenged to find them. And in a lot of cases, you wouldn't be able to find them. They're just really buried in a lot of other figures. So that's one problem, is that these plans are not very transparent. The other problem is, of course, that the fees are coming out of it. And with the fees coming out of it, that then compromises the ability to accumulate, you know, more and more savings as you approach retirement. Minimally, anyone who's in a plan that has the least fees is going to lose about 20% of their gain just due to the fees themselves. Now, there have been some pretty good documentaries on public television about this, and so I think there's a fair amount of awareness of it. But I don't consider that to be the larger problem in why these plans don't work. I think it's the difference between trying to save up individually for retirement versus the social insurance approach of Social Security and traditional pensions that accounts for the bigger cause of the problem.
Can we turn back the clock on this and go, since now there's such a domination of this kind of 401k programs as opposed to pensions?
Well, I think we can actually do it, at least here and there. And you know, the way that I got into all of this was to be able to buck the whole trend and get out of a 401k with, you know, lots and lots of Connecticut state employees and back into a traditional pension. And here and there are groups of employees who are doing this, who are realizing that, you know, these accounts just don't add up to retirement security. I think there are a lot of pieces of this. One piece is that people who still have pensions should fight like the dickens to keep them, because there are a lot of corporate interests that would, you know, like to just change over to a 401k where they don't have to have any responsibility for how they turn out in terms of people's retirement. I think the whole move to expand Social Security is kind of part of it, because it's not rolling back so much as taking the approach that works and trying to make it a bigger part of the whole combination of income that people need for retirement. So I think there's a lot that's out there that, you know, can be done.
I don't know if you're familiar with issues in Oregon related to Oregon's PERS, public pension system.
A little bit.
Yeah, last week the Oregon Supreme Court declared unconstitutional what the deal or the bargain that the governor and the Oregon legislature agreed on. And it involved reducing the COLA, or cost of living adjustment, which is one of the things that you write about. You know, what you hear from state leaders is that the pension system must be reformed. I don't know how you deal with that when you have that overall coming from the leaders that things need to change and things need to be reformed. How people taking these benefits, needing these benefits, how they can work with that?
Well, with a lot of the state pension plans, I mean, there's a lot of misinformation that's out there and misunderstanding, some of it intentional. With a state pension plan, the ones that are having problems are the ones that have unfunded liabilities, which is not so critical a problem as people think it is. I mean, it's a sort of scary term, but states have many years to amortize those debts, because there's a real distinction between an unfunded liability and a normal cost. Now, the reason why you get unfunded liabilities, and I don't know if this is the Oregon problem that they're dealing with, is because states in the past don't properly fund these pension plans, and then, you know, the problem mounts up. It's as if you didn't pay for the mortgage on your house for a number of years, your debt would, you know, skyrocket as a result of it. And so states have been very much tempted to balance budgets by just not making the required contribution. And then eventually that comes back to haunt you in the form of an unfunded liability. And then you have a lot of ideological interests that really kind of try to aggravate the whole thing by putting out a lot of public things that play on pension envy, because for people who have 401ks, you know, they're going to say, well, you know, why should I care about these state workers who have a pension plan, right? And I'm having to pay more taxes for this pension plan, which is not exactly true, okay, but it's something you can see that would be believable and cause a lot of resentment, which the right wing in this country plays on to divide people from each other.
Right. Well, James Russell, I'm sorry we've come to the end of our time. It's a really interesting book and, like I said, very clear in presenting this information, which sometimes I find really hard to understand. So thank you so much for talking about it with us here on KBOO.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
And we look forward to maybe interviewing you when you're in Portland later this year.
That would be great.
This is Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine. I have been speaking with James Russell, author of Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis. And now we're joined by Pear and Liz, I believe.
Yep.
Okay, great.
We're here.
We are here, and we have a copy of James Russell's book, Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis, which can be yours for a $60 minimum membership. And if you join at that level, you can receive the book. If you join at a slightly higher level, you can receive the book and a tree from Friends with Trees, which will be planted somewhere in the city in your honor. And how do you do that? You call 877-500-5266. So again, if you join at that $75 level, it's a triple win. You get a tree and you get a book and you get to support KBOO. Oh, actually, it's a quadruple win because then you get to feel really good about yourself.
That's right.
That's right.
Life is better.
That's right. And Pear, don't we have a whole lot of people who are feeling better about themselves right
yes,
now because of their contributions?
And they deserve to be feeling better. Yes, we want to thank Christine from Portland who is renewing.
Yay, Christine.
We want to thank Adette from Portland who is renewing.
Yeah, Dad.
Marlis from Portland, who is renewing.
Go, Marlis.
And we want to thank Jen from Portland, who is renewing.
Yay, Jen.
And Stevie from Portland, who is a new member.
Yay, Stevie. Let's hear it for the new ones.
And we want to thank Fred from Milwaukee, who is renewing.
Go, Fred. Milwaukee
and
represent.
Thomas from Lake Oswego, who is a new member.
Yay, Thomas from Lake Oswego.
And Yolanda from Portland, who is renewing.
Thanks, Yolanda.
And finally, Howard from Portland, who is renewing.
Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, one and all. You deserve to pat yourselves on the back and just feel better all day, well off the, just for the rest of this fiscal year.
And you know what? You'll smell better, too.
Oh, you'll, people.
They don't tell you that part.
People will flock to you.
That's
you'll just,
right.
You'll just exude that air of confidence and just sort of well-being.
But seriously, what really happens when you become a member of KBOO is you become a supporting member of this radio community. You are the community in community radio, and we are funded. Over 80% of our funding comes directly from individuals just like you. And so now is the time to step up and show your support for the Radio Zine, for all of the great public affairs programming that you hear on KBOO.
And pick nowhere up, else.
And nowhere else. Nowhere else are you going to hear this really interesting and thoughtful and timely and important discussion and analysis of what's really going on with Social Security. And if you're under the age of 50 and you're thinking, well, this isn't relevant to me, trust me, it will become relevant to you.
Soon. Sooner than you believe.
All too soon. It may be a relevancy for your parents right now or other friends of yours who are at retirement age. This is something that affects us all, and you're only hearing about it here. And so why don't you show your support right now? Pick up the phone, 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm.
Or come on down here to 20 Southeast 8th, just a block, half a block south of Burnside. Meet all these happy folks down here. Been taking calls and handing out the premiums and just sort of enjoying themselves, enjoying the KBOO family. So just come on down and see where your money is going. And once you become a member, you can learn how to do radio yourself. You can take a whole bunch of classes that are offered free of charge. You can serve on committees that help run the station. You can certainly vote for the board of directors, or you can run for the board of directors.
You can shape the future.
That is right. Can you do this on any other radio station that you know of?
I think not.
No way. No way.
So, but it starts with a phone call. Pick up that phone. 877-500-5266. Go from being a passive listener to an active member. You know, we have about 45,000 listeners at any given time, and less than 5,000 of those listeners are members. That's less than 1 in 10 of you right now. So now is the time to up that ratio just a little bit. You've been thinking about it for a while. You're thinking, I'll get to it eventually. Well, eventually is today. this minute at 11:58 and 34 seconds, 877-500-5266. Pick up a copy of James Russell's book, Social Security, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis for just $60. Pick up the book and a tree from Friends of Trees for just a $75 membership. $75 comes to just $6.25 a month, which we can do automatically with an automatic deduction from your bank card or your credit card. Our volunteers are standing by to explain all of that to you. It's safe, it's simple, it's secure, and the time is now. Show your support. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. We want to say a big thank you to everybody who has given their support so far, either as a renewing member, a sustaining member, or a new member. And what are you waiting for, the rest of you out there? Now, pick it up now. We need to hear from you. 877-500-5266.
Or come on down and see us. We're about ready here to go on to our noontime jamboree. But was it sort of this ends the news and public affairs part of the day. You got learned a lot of good information, and this stuff about Social Security, that is crucial information for all of you out there, no matter what your age. 877-500-5266.
Thanks.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, and it's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, May 11th, 2015. CIA whistleblower Jeffrey Sterling is set to be sentenced this afternoon for charges of passing classified information to New York Times reporter James Risen, despite the fact that virtually every official in Washington has media contacts and shares similar information. There was also little evidence that Sterling was actually the source for Risen's story, but Sterling was found guilty 4 months ago. He contends that he was specifically targeted as a black man because he had called out racism in the CIA on multiple occasions. We'll have a full report on the KBOO Evening News at 5, so be sure to tune in for that. George Zimmerman, the killer of 16-year-old Trayvon Martin 2 years ago, was apparently shot in the face this morning after a traffic dispute and was mildly injured. Since he was acquitted for killing the unarmed black teenager, Trayvon Martin